HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 117, recorded live Wednesday, June 4th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by the Code Better Blog Network, delivering tried and true solutions to real world problems for building better software. Online at codebetter.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks internationalization with developer Michael Kaplan.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here at TechEd with my friend Michael Kaplan, a developer in Windows International. How's it going, Michael? Thanks for sitting down with me.
Oh, pretty good. Glad to do it.
Now, you and I have known each other for a long time, and I think we ended up meeting because I commented on your blog with regards to my interest in Ethiopian languages, specifically Amharic.
Actually, I think the first time it came up was that Turkish bug, but the Ethiopic,
there was a Turkish bug. Actually, what was interesting about the Turkish bug, because, you know, I'm interested in internationalization, and you're a full-time developer in internationalization. Why is the Turkish language so interesting for Microsoft developers?
Unfortunately, it's most interesting because of a bug that commonly happens, and that's to do with the Turkish I, where they have a dotted uppercase version and a dotless lowercase version. And they case it the way you'd expect, where the dotless and dotted go together. We don't do that, but it means that they expect something totally different. The .NET framework supports it well, but it means all kinds of apps get broken all the time because they case something and they can't find a character later. I think that your blogging software was actually broken at one point because
it
of that. Not the whole thing, but part of it. And then you track down the bug, you find the one line of code that is responsible for bringing everything down.
Right, exactly. And a very good example of that would be, say that you had an application that was going to check for the word fail in a text box, and the user typed in fail, F-A-I-L, all lowercase, with an I with a dot on it. And in your code, you said text box dot to upper, you would get, in Turkish, F-A, capital I with a dot on it, L, and then you would check to see if that equaled fail, and it wouldn't.
Right.
And then your application would fail.
Right. And
makes total sense when you explain that the Turks have four eyes.
Yes.
But it was very not intuitive.
But all the wonderful things in the language about vowel harmony and the way that the words flow together is lost on everybody. What people remember is that darn Turkish bug.
Yeah, exactly. But that's an example of, you can't test your application on every single language.
Exactly.
But what are the languages someone should pick when they're trying to get a good coverage?
That's definitely a good core language to look at because that's one of those main bugs. Romanian came up recently as another one because of letters that they wanted added that don't exist in the code page but exist in Unicode. Mm-hmm. So it's a good way to test whether or not they're doing the right thing using Unicode properly. And actually, we were talking about Ethiopic, which was another interesting case because there were three core languages that were scheduled to be added to Vista that I felt really strongly needed to be because they'd been Unicode for like 5 years, and I was sick of waiting. And it was
so this was an example where there was a language in the Unicode spec that you felt Vista needed to support.
The Microsoft hadn't supported yet, but they could have.
Okay.
And it was Sinhalese, Mongolian, and Ethiopic. Mm-hmm. And Sinhalese, we snuck in because the government wanted to help us after tsunami. They needed help actually collecting names and things, so that we did an XP patch so they could use Sinhalese. So we knew that was going in because we had a font and everything. And Mongolian, they'd done a bunch of work on. And Ethiopic, they also did a bunch of work on.
Right. And when you say Ethiopic, you're referring to what's called the Fidel, which is the Amharic.
Yes.
Syllabary.
Yes. Ethiopic.
I don't usually call it Ethiopic.
My understanding is Ethiopic is a compromise thing that was done in the standard for the standard itself to come up with a neutral name for the script that isn't actually how even native speakers think of the script itself.
The native speakers call it the Fidel, but there's just as a there's the Latin script we call it, like when we write English, it's or French or whatever. There's this Latin script because that's the root language, Ethiopian Amharic. and the languages, you know, similar languages, have their Latin, which is called Ge'ez.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ge'ez.
Ge'ez is the, he also uses that script.
Okay.
So rather than calling it Ge'ez or calling it Amharic, you call it Ethiopic, and that's the compromise.
Okay. So the one advantage, you can think of Arabic with script and language where they're the same, people get confused all the time. So there's an advantage to having a separate name, although kind of a made-up name does seem odd.
Well, yeah, but, yeah, but like using you know, the Indian language, right? You know, using like the Devanagari scripts.
Exactly.
And, you know, someone who knows about Hindi and Gujarati and Punjabi and all these other languages wouldn't necessarily think of Devanagari as being, it doesn't exactly roll off the tongue.
Very true.
But
it
correctly describes the script. So back to my original question. What are some languages that I would pick? Do I pick? I mean, people usually say, well, you know, English, Spanish, and maybe Chinese. But I, you know, when I was doing internationalization, I would go Arabic, Chinese, and then I would make a pseudo-internationalized language that had, you know, funky accents and stuff like that.
So, yeah, I probably wouldn't. I mean, German is a common one people use because it's a good example of a language that takes up between 30 and 50% more space in the dialogues. Mm. So it's a good way to check for really for dialogues that are too tightly spaced, because you want English to look good, but you don't want to make the localizer work too hard. You don't want to clip stuff either.
Ah, right. That's a very interesting thing. You're pointing out that the length of the string,
the length of the string will change.
Will change because, the way that you your pages will lay out.
And English is fairly wordy too, but German is just more wordy.
Mm-hmm.
And German is also a good one because it's a tier one language for many types of markets where people are producing software. So it's a good typical language to use.
Right.
Then beyond that, getting into languages with other internationalization issues, Turkish is a great one to use because of the various Turkish issues that happen with the Turkish eye. I usually pick Arabic rather than Hebrew. I like to do one right to left,
right.
And Arabic has more issues related to it because Hebrew is very simple other than being right to left.
Because it doesn't have any ligatures.
Exactly. There's no odd shaping.
What's a ligature?
Well, a ligature is just when you're combining two letters together and producing something, it doesn't look exactly like they would separately.
Right, like cursive script in English.
Exactly. In fact, if you look at all the Uniscribe examples that are in MSDN, in the platform SDK, don't even mention Arabic. They give cursive Latin examples so that people, developers, actually can say, oh, I know what that is, instead of saying Arabic, I don't know it.
Okay.
So it's actually a wonderful, it's exactly what we're talking about.
Arabic is a cursive by default.
Arabic is essential. I mean, their block script is actually a very cursive script. It's very flowing. It's actually very beautiful. Not the kind of fonts you use every day, but some of the fancier fonts mm-hmm. look like the way typographers put in. It's beautiful. But it certainly, you find more problems with Arabic than you would with Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Because it should write to left. You have all those shaping things. I usually like to pick something like Thai as well, because Thai has other issues related to word breaking, and you want those things to work well by default, and sometimes they do, but not all components do so well. In fact, one of the interesting problems with the .NET framework is there are so many things that are, I mean, some controls are fully spaced out and some are just thin wrappers around something else.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with support that varies, and you can find that one particular control doesn't work with a script where another one will, especially when you're using third-party ones. And so it's a good, Thai becomes a good test of whether or not you can handle Uniscribe things like throughout India and other.
So what is that term, Uniscribe?
Oh, Uniscribe is the component in Windows that does all of the work to shape any script that requires extra work.
Interesting.
And by extra work, any kind of extra work, whether it's right to left or checking for illegal sequences, ligature formation.
So anything that's not just putting up straight English, Latin characters.
Pretty much.
Huh. You know, when I was doing internationalization, we were working in banking. We thought about the German example, and we thought about more complicated examples. One of the bugs that we wanted to catch was pushing UTF-8 code all the way through the system and back, and making sure that as it moved from web server to middle tier, from middle tier to database and back, that we didn't screw something up. We didn't turn into black squares. So testing the system all the way through to make sure that something wasn't lost.
Right. And sometimes people skip the Thai case because Thai has a code page, and they move right into one of the Indic languages like Hindi, because then you can test if anything ever gets into a code page and you are using Hindi, you better hope they speak fluent because that's all you have left by the time you're done there.
We worked with the Bank of Bangkok, so we learned that really quickly.
and so actually for Thai, I've had clients who we've actually used Laotian. Basically, we use Laotian because it doesn't have a code page, whereas Thai does. And it's another easy way to test for, if you see question marks, you know you're in trouble.
So let's back up a little bit to the to some of the basics, because you know we're both language geeks and we're both Unicode type geeks, but I think we understand ASCII. I think that one of the demos I like to do when I talk to high school students is I go out to the command line, I type copy con foo.txt, I type ABC, control Z, and then I go debug foo.txt, and I go and look at it, and we say, all right, 67, 68, 69, you know, here's the characters. So I think people understand some of the fundamentals of, you know, why is A, what is it? I think it's 67, I'm not sure.
Oh,
69, I can never remember.
Well, no, actually, 41 and 60, I think in hexadecimal, not in...
Oh, you think in hexadecimal, right, because you're a full-time developer on this stuff. Okay, I think in base 10. This is going to be a huge problem,
65.
Michael.
And
65.
Yes. Okay. I do those in my head now, but that's...
Okay. So...
I go to fewer parties because of that. So.
Yeah, that is a problem. So then I go to, like, Yahoo China, and I'll select a Chinese character, and I'll paste it in a notepad in the middle of my ABC, and I'll save it as Unicode with a byte order mark, and then I'll go out and I'll show people the byte order mark. And this is like... That byte order mark is just so... I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I've received an email where someone said, and I looked and there were these funny two characters at the beginning of my string and suddenly everything looked bad. What is a byte order mark? When do I need it? When do I not? Why is it sometimes there? Why is it not sometimes there?
Okay, so the byte order mark was put in by Unicode as a good way to indicate what the text is. And when it's UTF-16 is where the most common use of it was. And UTF-32, I guess, might be the second most common. The idea being to... mark what the text is. And it's interesting because the character is FEFF. That's the character that's there. It's also doubles as a zero width, no break space. And they decided it was a good thing to start with because there's no purpose to having a zero width, no break space at the beginning of a text. So if you see it at the very beginning, then it must be a byte order mark.
And you wouldn't see it because...
And you wouldn't see it anyways because it's invisible. In fact, it's amazing. Many people complain about the byte order mark. And I say, I've never heard so much complaint about something that you can't see, has no width, yet, you know, megabytes are written about it.
But certainly you've proven that you don't, that your system is not understanding Unicode, because if you ever see the thing...
Oh, yeah.
Whatever shows up with a question mark and some silly character, then you're obviously not displaying your zero width, no, you know, zero.
I mean, to this day, most Microsoft internal developers actually use WinDiff to do their diffing, mm-hmm. and it doesn't understand UTF-8, so you always see that byte order mark anytime they've saved something as UTF-8.
So it's a marker, but also it describes...
It basically... And the place where it's a problem for people outside of Microsoft, we sort of led to kind of our own people criticizing us. Mm-hmm. We include the byte order mark in UTF-8 as well, where it's not considered necessary, but it's considered an optional thing, because you don't need to know the order of the text. You don't need to know whether the...
Because the byte order mark display, it's not just a marker.
Exactly.
It is actually describing order of something.
Exactly. But in UTF-8, the order is always the same. It's byte-based, but it's useful in UTF-8 because if you go into Notepad and you have just ASCII text, mm-hmm. and you save it as UTF-8 in the dialogue, mm-hmm. We don't have any metadata to remember that. But we do have this byte order mark to put in. But if you load it up again and you didn't get what you saved, people would complain. So we said, well, let's just add the byte order mark. Unfortunately, it seems, and our biggest complaint still comes from people who write Unix shell scripts in Notepad, mm-hmm. which is a market that I don't think anybody ever imagined.
So you're in Windows, in Notepad, writing a Unix shell script.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this sounds like the most far-fetched thing in the world, but I have hundreds of emails from people explaining how common this is. So
really?
I can't even describe it.
Because I was thinking to myself, when you were describing that byte order marks belong in UTF-16 and UTF-32, I was like, huh, but I see them in all my UTF-8.
Yep.
And then you said, well, Microsoft put it there, and I'm thinking, oh, no. What did Microsoft do now?
Well, I mean, it
sounds like it makes sense.
It does make sense. It's just that it doesn't make sense from the standpoint of people who support UTF-8, not for the characters, but just because it happens to work.
Yeah.
And when you look at something like a Unix shell script, there's a specific protocol that you have to start with, and it doesn't include starting with these other characters. Mm-hmm. So it causes them problems.
So most people spend their time in whatever their native language is, and it just works. And when things get, when things go wrong, it's when they switch over and they start to localize things.
Yes.
I worked with a bank in Israel, and they were not familiar with internationalization. And it seemed to me, and this is such an ethnocentric way of me to think, and I was like, how can they not be familiar with international? They're international. Well, of course they're not. They're domestic.
Yes.
You know, relative to Israel. But they, it just worked for them. But when you start inserting other languages, you make a truly globalized multilingual system and you mix things, particularly when you're mixing right to left and left to right in the same exact text file.
Yes.
Things start to get really interesting.
That's something we still do poorly, I think. I mean, it's interesting. Hebrew itself has some elements that are left to right, basically numbers. Mm-hmm. And they certainly have some English text. And as a rule, those things work well. Mm-hmm. What doesn't work well is when you actually have Hebrew text you're kind of inserting into English, like as an example, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. We're very poor with that, like true bidirectional.
So poor in what sense?
Poor in what sense? You can't really ever hope to copy-paste a sample and have the have it look the same wherever you paste it. You have to worry about the machine you're on affecting the underlying thing. I mean, there are markers you can put in that have that will strongly decide stuff that mm-hmm. we never add.
Yeah, I've had that happen before when doing samples where I'll grab like an Arabic headline and I'll successfully copy it and I'll paste it into some application that's just not the most clever application, and I'll look at it and I took Arabic in college, but I've forgotten it all. But I know enough to say that doesn't look like a word.
Yep. And it's often and basically ends up being wrong.
And things have been flipped around.
Yeah. And there's our story could definitely be better here.
But it's a very difficult problem to solve.
Well, I mean, in practice, it's actually easy because I go under simple principle. I believe that a computer program should be able to work as well as an 8-year-old would be able to work. An 8-year-old, and
it's I don't think our computers are toddling yet.
Well, but they're not smart enough to do this yet. But an 8-year-old who's looking at the text can tell you what order things should be in.
Uh huh.
So when I look at, if I look at an MUI system for Windows,
MUI,
a multilingual user interface, and I look at the list of languages that are in the native scripts, and I look at the fact that in Arabic, all of the scripts that have parentheses in them on their list, like you have, think of one.
Well, Arabic Morocco, Arabic Algiers.
Well, I mean, one that's actually on the list, like Chinese simplified or Chinese traditional. The Arabic, where basically all the parentheses get flipped so they look wrong.
Mm.
And I think even an 8-year-old looks at that and knows that it's wrong and can describe the problem. And I think anytime the 8-year-old can describe it, yeah, the computer should be able to figure it out.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, an 8-year-old can describe that it feels wrong or that they're because the human brain is such a great pattern matcher that you can notice so that this ligature is wrong or those kerning, that bit of kerning is wrong.
Right, but in this case,
but how do you write an algorithm to figure that out?
In this case, I mean, the simple rule is we basically put in, see, the problem is the parentheses are considered neutral, so they take whatever's surrounding them. But if in the case where you have it's right to left overall, like
okay,
a right
so
to
I have
system,
a sentence and it's right to left.
No. The system is right to left.
The system is right
but
to left.
In this case, you happen to have a bit of Chinese, which is left to right, in the middle of it.
Okay.
You want the left to right to control. You don't want the Arabic to intervene on any of the text in the middle.
Okay.
So you want to put a marker in front of that neutral character to say this is left to right. And we have those characters. In fact, if you call the getDateFormat function, there's a flag you can put in that says insert those characters. So
okay,
we do that stuff, but we do none of it automatically. Mm-hmm. And it seems like at the display level, it should be something to just notice the context. And we're smart enough to write the algorithm for this.
Right.
It's just that nobody really wants to jump in and do
it. It's such a difficult thing. I mean, the idea that we work for the 99% case, but you never know when someone might be writing Arabic and wants to include a Chinese character. And then think about all the Cartesian products of different combinations of things that someone could potentially want to do.
Indeed.
Someone's doing Tamil and Ethiopian side by side, and it doesn't work. How many kinds of obscure bugs do you get when it's only two languages that are combined in some strange way? Have you seen anything like that?
Well, it's actually what I like to focus on, specific languages that are kind of edge cases when you mix them in. So like when you include Arabic mm-hmm. in the mix, you find a whole class of bugs because you're putting Arabic in the world. Sometimes I run the other UI languages.
Now, this is interesting. Actually, before we get into that, in XP, I remember if I wanted to go and visit a Chinese website, I had to go into the regional settings under language tools and say install East Asian fonts.
Yes.
But under Vista, to be clear, everything's just there, right?
They are there.
So on any machine, even mom's Vista Home,
they are all there.
She can go and start typing Chinese immediately.
Yes.
But she can't get the UI in Chinese. But,
yeah, the UI requires, that's an extra thing you include. If you have Ultimate, you can actually install them directly. If you don't, then you can upgrade.
Yeah, that was definitely a decision that I didn't agree with.
Which?
Not being able to have a regular Vista Home have, you know, Albanian.
Okay, I agree with. But
you agree with that. So we both agree that all versions of Vista should be able to have whatever language anyone wants to speak.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that'll change.
Well, I mean, there are things that were interesting about it, because most people I've talked to, they have no problem with, I mean, they're adding a language. It's clearly they're doing something extra. They have no problem with paying a little extra for that, but that Ultimate seems weird to them.
Yeah.
Because I'm a home system. I just happen to have two people in the family who speak two different languages. My mom speaks a different language.
So why do I have to buy Ultimate in order to
do that? Exactly. So it's people don't mind paying extra, but they do mind.
So there's two different things here. There's having any version of Vista. I could buy French Vista or English Vista, and I'm going to get either the English user interface or the French user interface. On both of those, though, I can immediately start typing Chinese or even Ethiopian. So any Vista has got Ethiopian out of the box. You just go in and you enable it as a language, and I can start typing Ethiopian in Notepad.
Yes.
But if I want to have a Chinese start menu or an Albanian start menu, then I have to go and get this. Is it a MUI?
It's either Enterprise or Ultimate, and then you
and the term is MUI. Multilingual User Interface, yes. MUI. So you use this term MUI.
Yeah. Well, I use MUI. There's a
MUI.
There's a weird. I don't know.
Only MUI guy. Then.
No. MUI is actually what the team who owns it calls it now. But
I see.
You know, they're second generation.
And then there's a difference between having an input language in the sense of being able to input this, and maybe someone's using an English or a French Vista and typing Chinese emails to grandma, versus running the entire user interface in that particular language.
Yes. In fact, the list of languages that are fully translated into is smaller than the list of ones you can actually type stuff into.
What are the numbers?
208 locales in Vista, and I think there's over 100 if you include the partially localized, the language interface packs those are free.
Okay, so what's the difference between a language interface pack and a MUI?
Well, localization, one thing they know about it, it's very expensive.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
In fact, it's equally expensive to do it badly as to do it well.
And I've been doing localization work for years. My very first job out of college was to do English, Japanese, French on Windows 3.1.
Okay.
And one of the things that I found in working with international localization, rather, is no one will ever agree with the translation that the guy picked.
Well, some people will agree, but you'll never get complete assent for any of those things.
I can't tell you how many times people will spend all this money, we'll translate it into Spanish, and I'll show it to somebody and go, "Oh, we don't say that here."
Mm-hmm. And actually, Spanish is a fun politically charged case, because most of the localization work that happens in the United States is done from Mexican companies, which, you know, the pure Castellano people, the Spaniards, don't like at all, and they can tell the difference. I find traditionally, if you work with, you know, Quebecois French, the people in France don't like it, but they can't always distinguish. And so I think they don't always know, the same way the Spanish can definitely tell, because there's so many dialect type differences that you can spot.
All right, this is a great discussion. Let's take just a brief moment and thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Do you know how to make the possible out of the impossible? Well, the .NET ninjas at Telerik do. They just released a huge pack of web controls all built on top of ASP.NET Ajax that'll help you build impossibly fast and interactive applications in no time at all. They've made the impossible possible in desktop development. If you think you can't have a carousel component in WinForms, well, you can. Their Windows Forms suite features a super powerful grid view control and 32 other crazy desktop components that'll give you dazzling WPF-like features, but in WinForms. They do the same thing in reporting solutions with a new design surface like nothing else. Looks just like graph paper. Gives you advanced page layout capabilities. Makes it feel more like a graphic design software than a reporting solution. Go check them out at Telerik.com and be a .NET ninja. And thanks for listening. This week's Hansel Minutes is brought to you by CodeBetter.com, the CodeBetter.com blog network. It's made up of over 20 industry leaders and speakers who are passionate about delivering tried-and-true solutions to real-world problems for building better software. These guys are not only our sponsor this week, but they're also my friends. The CodeBetter Blog Network, it's where industry leaders blog. You can find them at codebetter.com, as well as devlicious, devlicio.us. So I'm sitting here talking about internationalization and localization issues with Michael Kaplan from Windows International. And yeah, I've definitely found when doing translation work that people are very passionate about the words that you use, and they're very frustrated when things don't either look or feel exactly right. You pick the wrong word and you can alienate an entire group. I understand that they had to change the time zone map inside.
Oh, yeah.
What was the deal with that?
Well, it happened in there was a huge Windows 95 scandal, and this was when the lines were removed from the map, and it just became this amorphous shapes of land masses.
Mm-hmm.
That was safer than trying to draw lines, because not everybody agrees with the lines.
Right, and so people were disagreeing with the way the time zone, because it was outlining the edge of their country.
Exactly.
Which may have been a border that was in
dispute.
And
when it's in dispute, I mean, you can't talk about places like Kashmir and things like that and not have somebody unhappy with the choice you've made. In fact, one of the things that's hard about being Microsoft is there are languages that we can't support because of those things directly.
Really? Like what?
Well, we can't do Kashmir, for example.
You can't support the Kashmir language?
Well, because you can't call it Kashmir, because some people really feel like they own it. And you can't pick one of those places because the people who feel they own it disagree with each other about which parts they own.
So what do you call it?
Well, we can't call it anything, because anything we'd call it would lead to somebody else being offended. And people go to war over stuff like that, and they use as proof that they are the winner of an argument.
So does this mean that basically everyone who speaks Kashmir and wants to run Windows just loses out?
Well, they don't lose out. They lose out on being in the box. I mean, we don't have a font built in.
I see. Can they get it?
They can get a font.
Oh, I see. So this is interesting, because when I was doing Ethiopian work, writing menus for local Ethiopian restaurants, Windows didn't support it, so I would go find the font, because some intrepid Ethiopians would go and build a font from scratch.
Right.
And we'd figure out a way to type it in, and people would write custom IMEs, input method editors. So I assume we could probably look around on the web and find, if there's a language that Windows doesn't support, there may be a font, though.
Yes, and that's the other thing that comes in interesting. When people talk about us supporting a language, they're often talking about they want everything there. They want the locale, they want the sorting, they want the font, you know, the whole package. We kind of think the same way, where this actually gets back a long way back, but I was very concerned about Ethiopic, about Amharic specifically, because I really felt strongly we needed it in, but there was some concern because we kept getting promised the input method by the vendor we were working with that we were going to have.
So this is a really important note, that you've got your font, and you've called out your locale and your sorting, but the input method editor, we've got all these keyboards that have mostly English characters on them, and you can certainly buy Japanese keyboards, and you can buy Arabic keyboards, but Ethiopic and Amharic, the Fidel's got something like 236 characters. It's not an alphabet.
Right.
It's a syllabary.
And they need a input method that actually will work, that's intuitive for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were promised this, that it would work. We could do it with MS. They claimed we could do it with MSKLC. They were going to have it any day.
What is that? MSKLC?
The keyboard layout creator, which just built standard keyboards. And I, at the time, didn't really know to differ with them.
Right.
But it turns out then the vendor kind of disappeared. There was kind of a minor snafu. We were worried that we would have to pull out all of it, because we can't say we support a locale and not let you type in it.
Right.
And I was morally and technologically, in every sense, opposed to taking it out.
Yeah.
Because I said, this is one of those scripts that's been there for a long time. We have no business waiting. So I pushed really hard on a different technology, which was being used because people found that creating IMEs was very complicated.
Okay, so if I wanted to make Scott language or Klingon, if I want Klingon support and I want an IME for Klingon, I would have to go and write a bunch of code.
Oh, right, and there's hundreds of interfaces. There are no good samples. It's very hard to do. I mean, people have done it, but it's incredibly hard.
Okay.
And because of that, in Vista, they created a text-based system that would wrap the hard stuff, and you create a text file with the core information that's needed.
Hmm.
Everything else would happen automatically.
Sounds cool.
So I said, maybe we could use this and just build something for Amharic.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through, and I worked out the technological issues, which was easy because I didn't know the language, so I didn't have anything that would be useful for a native speaker yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, okay, so we can actually do this, and we're playing with the settings, what we need. So we started kind of trolling around looking for experts in the language who would be able to give us a big list that amounts to, if I type this letter or these letters, this is what I want.
Right. And this wouldn't just be any old random Ethiopian guy on the street. This would be someone who knows the language.
Yeah, we want some want a native speaker. We want, I mean, I've written keyboards even for governments where they're transcribing information. The keyboard they would use is very different than what a native speaker would use.
Exactly.
So we want people who just whatever they'd intuitively inspect.
Mm-hmm.
We've, in the end, it turned out that what we did was fairly intuitive because we've had external people actually say that it was very quick for them to do. Most of the guesses were what they were expecting.
Right. And one of the things that's interesting about Ethiopian is that, of course, in English, you've got five vowels. In Ethiopian, you've got seven, and there's this non-vowel. So, and it's a syllabary. And when Ethiopians learn to say their alphabet, they don't sing ABC like we do. They
right.
sing ha, hu, hi, ho, ha, hu, hi, he, ho, la, lu, li, le, li, le, lo. And it's, they go on this grid, and it's the syllables, and they go, you know, the first column is la, and is the ahs example, and then the second column is the lu.
Actually, and people who speak Japanese would be familiar with mm-hmm. that kind of a
so
grid.
So if you know katakana, or then you would feel comfortable, or Hebrew, you would feel comfortable in Ethiopian, because Ethiopian is actually an Afro-Semitic language. And when they type it, if you were going to type ha, you would type ha, but there's actually two ha's.
So you have to know which one is
so
there.
So which ha did you mean? Because they both sound like ha, but the A, the vowel is a different vowel.
Right.
And it's subtle. So then you have to pick, and we only have five vowels to pick from on the keyboard, so you have to pick another one. So there was a keyboard, there was a program that was called Gez Pro on Windows 3.1, and that was the first custom input method editor, and it was basically a custom Ethiopian notepad that only... It only typed Ethiopian, and it only worked with this one font. And then you would basically type your Ethiopian script in this editor, which
okay.
was an all-in-one editor, IME. And then you would copy-paste your work into Word. And Visual Basic 3 at the time did not support anything internationalized. So people would create – but interestingly, it did at runtime, but the designer didn't. So what would happen is you would go and you'd say, I want a label that says first name. And you would write it in Amharic and Gez Pro. You'd put it in the clipboard. You'd paste it into the designer. It would show up as black squares. You'd hit F5 and you'd run Visual Basic and then it would show up and look correct.
What you wanted, yeah.
And that's still a way that many Ethiopian developers work today.
Which is very scary.
Which is really, really bad.
But still some of that's today. In fact, I was actually talking to, I'm doing a panel later on SQL Server, and I was talking to my person I'm doing with. They were asking me why it was that in the results pane of, when they're running queries, they were able to see any language, but in the actual, when they're typing it, they just see square boxes.
Right.
And we kind of went through and I showed them what was going on. It's just, you know, some edit controls don't support particular languages, particular things. But they were just floored at the some things work perfectly and other things just don't work at all. And
exactly. Exactly. So an input method editor, they would type H
yep.
and then they would get a combo box, like an autocomplete. It would pop
yep.
down and it would show them, here are the things that you might want.
Exactly. And as you're continuing to type, that list gets smaller.
Okay, so this is a list of candidates.
A list, basically, and that's it's literally what it's called. It's called the candidate list
okay.
for IMEs. And basically, HA, and in our case, we had basically an H lowercase a and an H uppercase a for the two different letters that were there. And that's, you know, what we ended up choosing. The technology itself doesn't distinguish them.
Right.
So basically, it just shows the two in the same candidate list.
Oh.
But maybe there was some other letter that would be HAE or something like that.
Right.
So you'd actually maybe have more candidates as well.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you just get down to one or two, and then you basically choose one, and you're there. The typing is very fast, although it'd be faster if
right.
we could tell the difference between those two.
And it's interesting to see more languages with more mature support, like Japanese. You know, in the you would use an IME, and you could type like domorai gato, and you'd say D-O, and it'd pick a character. M-O, and it would pick a character. But for some people, when the tablet PC came out, it was faster to just draw it, because they would just draw the stroke, and that would provide a candidate. So then there was that tablet PC-based Japanese IME.
Yep. Which people enjoyed a lot more. And really, all it requires is some work on the actual handwriting recognition side, which...
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for some languages than others, but also requires the effort. And
well, what was great about that, and what's so interesting about it from a Japanese perspective, is that stroke order is important, right? In the U.S., you can draw an A, and it doesn't matter which side of the A you pick, or if you draw the middle part first. There's no concept of that. But that stroke order can provide a way to narrow down your candidates.
Well, and although in English, I mean, I was told, and I certainly did very poorly in penmanship going to school, because, for example, O's, you're supposed to start at the top of the circle.
Says who?
Okay, says the teacher. Now, I have always, and to this day, still start from the right. That's just what I do.
And from the right of the circle?
From the right of the circle. I have no idea why. It's just what I do. but I used to get in trouble because you always end with, you see the residual, you see some little thing. And so I'd always get marked off because of my O's that were.
And apparently, 30 years later, you're still deeply bitter about this.
I am a little bitter about it.
And I think that even though you failed handwriting, that the fact that you're doing so well in internationalization, I think, is the best revenge is living well.
Exactly.
Well, thanks so much for sitting down with me today, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Sure.